Okay, here we go. We are up to Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz. Yep. Yonason Eibschitz. I realized, as I was preparing, I realized we skipped two major personalities, because we hope, as we journey forwards, we're going to be going from Rabbi Talmud. On our journey forwards, we skipped the Panim Iris. How did I remember? Because Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz is a Talmud of the Panim Iris, so we have to get back to him, as well as the Pnei Yeshua, because Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz took over, one of his positions was filling the void left by the Pnei Yeshua, who was his elder. And the Pnei Yeshua actually weighed in when Rabbi Yaakov Emdin and Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz had this controversy play out. He actually was the one who weighed in to try to help it out. Now, when was Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz born? Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz was born in Tuf Nun. It doesn't get old. Tuf Nun. Tuf Nun, 1240. What? 1690. Amazing. Tuf Nun. He was born in the city of, he was born in Tuf Nun, and he was an enikel of the Megala Amukis. The Megala Amukis, the Mavoi Sha'arim, those are both Shapiras, okay, from Lublin. The Megala Amukis in Lublin? I'm pretty sure he's in Lublin. So, he had yichus from every side, but funny, Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz didn't talk about it. He didn't talk about his yichus. Now, I recently saw, you know, I actually was privy to find out about these farim from none other than Rabbi Aaron Lapiansky, who on one of his shiurim said, you know, one of my favorite, he always likes to be transparent, where did I get my stuff from? That's always how he starts, and we'll try to do the same. There was a fascinating person, a chassidisher, a real chassidisher, who definitely was somewhat of an academic. There's no way to deny it. His name was Greenwald. Yeah? Puppe, Papa, yeah, from Matzah fame. Everyone knows, right? Yeah. So, Arugas HaBoisem and the Greenwalds were big rebbes back in Transylvania, right? Romania, Transylvania, all those places. So, he came to America, and his name was Rabbi Kusiel Yehuda Greenwald. Okay? Doesn't get more Hasidish than that. Yekusiel Yehuda, another famous Yekusiel Yehuda was the Kloisenberger Rebbe. Yekusiel Yehuda, fine. The Satmar Rebbe, right? Reb Zalman Leib is Yekusiel Yehuda Zalman Leib. Yeah, fine. Kitzer, what happened was that this Rabbi Greenwald comes to America and he becomes a Rav in Columbus, Ohio. And his pen name is Rabbi Leopold Greenwald. And Rabbi Leopold Greenwald wrote many, many works on the Beis Yosef, on the Yonason Eibschitz, and Rabbi Yaakov Emdin. Fascinating stuff. So, I definitely got a lot from him, and he goes and talks about how this whole thing played out. So, Yonason Eibschitz was, hands down, from the biggest geniuses, Talmidei Chachamim, period. There's nothing to dispute. Well before this whole controversy starts to come to be, he has Talmidim, he writes Svarim. What are some of the Svarim that Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz writes? Urim V'Tumim. Urim V'Tumim was a Pirushan. What? Yairis Dvash was his Drushes. Yairis Dvash are his Drushes, a classical work quoted by many about Tefillah, about Bitachen, Ashkacha, many beautiful, beautiful thoughts. That's Yairis Dvash. Another one is Kresi Uplesi on Yeridea. Another one is, again, two different Pirushim, each one more voluminous than the next, Kresi and Plesi. And then there's Urim and Tumim. That was on Chosh Mishpat. Yeah, and these Sfarim, which just makes it so confusing. And again, if anyone thinks that we're going to get down to the bottom of this and we're going to find out who was right and who was wrong in this controversy, sorry, this is not the place. Because there's many people who've dealt with it, professors and the like, and I'm not going to be weighing it. I always like to paint two sides so we can at least appreciate what this struggle is about. Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz was a tremendous, tremendous Talmid Chacham, and his Svarim are learnt till today in every yeshiva everywhere. Urim V'Tumim, Kresi Uplesis are everywhere. They're on the shelves. They were not excommunicated, period. Nothing to talk about. Rabbi Yaakov Emden's Svarim, Marg Tzia, and many of the other ones, not the ones that he wrote, the ones that he wrote about the Gedolim and these extremely sharp words that he has about anyone and everyone. He was not afraid to take down anyone he wanted. Those Svarim are not as well known, but his other Svarim on Halacha, on Pirushim, the Siddur of the Ivets, is definitely well known. So, both of their Svarim are still in the scene, or on the scene of the Torah world. That's Rabbi Yaakov Emden, that's Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz. So now, where did Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz, where did he come from? He was born in Pinchov. I believe that's Poland. Okay. Where was Eibshitz? How did he get the name Eibshitz? Right? As we know, there were no surnames. So how did he get the name Eibshitz? Eibshitz was a city which is the German form of Ivanchik. Okay? Ivanchik, I don't know how to read when you see all these Czech cities and they have lots of little strechels and signs. I don't know how to pronounce it. So please do not quote me on the pronunciation. Which was a German form of a Czech city, Czech Republic, right? Czechoslovakia, Czech, where Prague is. That's where he was born, and that name stuck. So that's why he was called Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz. He ended up going to the city of Prague. By the time he was 20, he already had a few Talmidim. Then he became a Rosh Shiva. Then he moves on to the city of Metz. Yeah, anyone heard of the city? We've mentioned in the past. Metz. That is, again? Shagasaria, very good. Shagasaria took over Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz. Who was the Rav in Metz? Metz obviously was a very affluent and on the map city because the Pnei Yeshua was the Rav in Metz. The way it worked is, if you had a metropolis, you had people living there, they were able to afford the biggest gedolim of the generation. They would send them a ksav rabbonis, come be our Rav, and that was it. Obviously, it came down to being able to lure them and make it worth their while. That's definitely a factor. And the Pnei Yeshua went, followed by Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz, followed by the Shagas Aryeh. It's like the who's who. If you were Rav in Metz, you made it. And there were a few kehilas like that. Prague was like that. And kehilas Ehu, right? The Gimel kehilas of Altoona, Hamburg, and Wandsbek in Germany, that was another big kehila that had the means and the stature to host many, many big rabbanim. Who were their rabbanim? The Chacham Tzvi. The Chacham Tzvi, who was the father of Rabbi Yaakov Emden, he was the Rav in the Gimel Kehilas of Ahu, as well as his son did not take him over. That's definitely part of the story. His son, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, was not his successor. And the Kehila goes and brings in Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz, which doesn't help any part of the story. Okay? That's just backdrop. Okay. So where is he? He's in Prague, he's in Metz, he's in Ahu, Altoona, Hamburg, and Wandsbek. Now this is where the story begins. What was this machlokes even over? What was it revolving around? It was revolving around...
He left Metz because it was a better opportunity?
Yes. No, there was no... As we mentioned in the past, very rarely did Rabbanim, stick out for 40 years in one kehila. It didn't happen. Rabbanim were usually on the move. That's just the nature. It was almost the name of the game. That's where you started off in a little shtetl, you went up to a city, and if you were, sought after enough, so you moved on to the big cities. So now, he comes to the Gimel Kehilas, and now what he did was, he was a tremendous mekubel, which as we mentioned, is red flag number one. When you're very oisig in Kabbalah, and the generation is still reeling from Shabtai Tzvi, who definitely was mevatel many, many mitzvahs through the means of Kabbalah, so if you're a big mekubel, it's a red flag. And what did he write? There's something called kemeyas, right? Kemeyas are, I made this mistake once, we're not going to make it again, amulets, right? Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz was a tremendous Talmud Chacham in Nigla and Nister, right? And as Rabbi Yaakov Lal is very, very wont to say, that you only get so far in Nister, insofar as you got in Nigla. If you know Shas, Sifri, Sifra, Teres Koinim, Medrash Rabbah, and you know Nigla, the sky's the limit in Nistar. If you jump into Nistar and you don't really know any of the known Torah, you're really capped, because you don't have the necessary grounds. Again, I'm taking Rabbi Yaakov Hillel's word for it, who's known as a Makovel, and yeah, take it or leave it. I cannot weigh in. I'm not even 40. So, there you go. No Kabbalah for me. So, there you go. That's spoken as a litvak, right? Obviously, if you're Hasidish or Sephardi, you start at your bar mitzvah. You start learning Kabbalah. So, next, where are we? He goes and he writes amulets. Not to be confused with a Hatzalah truck. That's an ambulet, right? Which, that mistake has been made. Don't do that. Don't try that at home. Amulet is a special kimeya, a special, he would write these special concoctions of words, tzirufei shemus, and special words. Why? To help women who are pregnant have a easy pregnancy. Okay? And he would write them regularly. This was regular Kabbalah stuff. Okay? You need a Yeshua. Don't worry. You wear this kimeya. You would wear it as a necklace, and in Mirza Hashem, you'd be saved.
You'd be saved. He was initiated.
No, people would come. He was an address. People would come to him all the time to try to get another kimeya. Someone was ill, someone was sick. Now, these kimeyas were then later inspected. Now, this is again, they were inspected, and Rabbi Yaakov Emden gets a hold of one of these kimeyas and said, I don't know who wrote this, but whoever wrote this is a Shabtai Tzvi follower 100%. Okay? There is no greater way to sow fear and hysteria in a generation of the early 1700s than by saying one Gadol who had his own footing in Kabbalah going and saying these amulets were pure Shabtai Tzvi Kabbalah. And if you see there's nuances and references to him being the Mashiach and him being the one who's going to be the Goyel, and this is terrible, this person must be dethroned. He must be de-bearded. He must be, he's terrible, absolutely a sakana for society. So who's going to weigh in? Anyone want to weigh in? Is it real or not real? Again, it's like none of us are equipped, and no one there in that generation was equipped.
I mean, obviously, Shabtai Tzvi didn't start this way, but it can also come to a point where, like, Eibshitz wasn't telling people to break halacha. He wasn't telling people to not fast on Tisha B'Av, right? So as long as somebody's following halacha, what's the fear?
100%. By the way, kimeyas have been around since the time of the Gemara. Kimeyas are nothing new. They're not some hooji-booji. They are hooji-booji. But they're not this new invention. There's Sifim and Shulchan Aruch about kimeyas by Muktzah, right? A kimeya is a kimeya of a mumcha, not of a mumcha. It's Gemaras that talk about kimeyas, these amulets, as a protection. So he wrote one too. The question is, what do you put inside? I have a great story with the Taz that we don't have time for. Okay, amazing. Again? Supposedly. Now, right. If he knew...
Means he was objective.
Right. If he knew, it would be totally tainted. Again, but this is in as much as you claim that these Gedolim had any bias, which is very hard to say, and very hard for many reasons. Very hard to verify and very hard to say. Right? Those are two separate things. So, that's where the story begins. And this is where, literally, Klal Yisrael gets teared apart again. And just like any machlokes, there's never clarity. And there's not clarity till today. There's not clarity till today exactly what went down. And who was making it up, and who was in the right, and who was in the wrong. And this is why it's very, very hard, because only Gedolim who were versed in Kabbalah were even eligible to weigh in. And everyone else is just taking sides. So again, we have another facet of this, like, the masses, almost in the dark, feuding and having a machlokes that they themselves cannot really weigh in. But if our Rav said that this is a problem, right? And then it got so far. How do we know anything about Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz? There was a Yid, his name was Carl Anton. Carl Anton was absolutely secular. He was not Shomer Torah Mitzvahs at all. Carl Anton was a Talmud of Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz when he used to be religious. How did he come onto the scene? Because, again, jumping ahead, we're not going to go through the entire storyline. But, like all good machlekes, we know Shabtai Tzvi made it all the way. Shabtai Tzvi made it all the way to the Sultan of the Turkish Empire, who weighed in and eventually coerced him to convert to Islam. Shabtai Tzvi converted to Islam. The emperor of the Austrian Empire meddled and started to get involved to try to mediate what was going on, because those German kahilas were under his auspices, and there was tremendous machlekes and fights, and taxes were being messed with because community was being teared apart and no one wanted to be part of the other community. There was a Yaakov Emden side, and there was a Berenson Eibschitz side, and it was potentially physically dangerous in these communities because it was such a heat in Machlokes. So who comes to the defense to represent Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz to the leader of the Austrian Empire? Carl Anton, who was a Talmud when he used to be religious, and he was very fond of his Rebbe, Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz. And he records a lot of this history. How do I know this? Rabbi Leopold Greenwald, he archives where he got his information from. Carl Anton is one of the starting points. And he goes and says about the gedula of his Rebbe, Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz, who was the Baki B'chol HaTorah Kula. This is the most fascinating thing. You see someone totally irreligious talking about the godless in Torah, and he was a tzaddik and a porush, and this was Carl Anton. So now there's full svarim. Again, just so you all know, there's full svarim written about these topics. As we mentioned, Yaakov Emden writes a whole sefer. Unfortunately, in some of the versions nowadays, or fortunately, the whole chapters on Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz have been omitted, because it's a moot point, because we still learn his svarim and we still learn his Torah. So obviously, there's no reason to hear Rabbi Yaakov Emden absolutely tear apart Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz. And Rabbi Yonason Eibschitz has another sefer that he wrote in his own defense called Luchos Eidus. So there's, if anyone has a lot of time on their hands, definitely a fascinating read in Hebrew. And they're both describing the storyline from their perspective.
They're debating the Amulets.
Yeah, and saying exactly, yes.
Was he saying that he was going to be like another Mashiach type person?
Not at all. Not at all. Yeah. He was not claiming I'm a Mashiach and I'm taking over the world.
Was Rav Yaakov Emden saying?
No. He was saying, yeah. Okay, we got to end. We are over time. And that is part one to be continued. To hear more about Rav Yaakov Emden's sad and Rav Yonason Eibschitz's greatness, to be continued.